Okay, so back to more detail, guys. Okay, now we're at that first part in your workbook, because we like to go back to front. So if we can turn to that page. Okay, so now we're going to get into process. Why do we need to have a process? Look, I want this session to be as valuable as possible, because the other one's quite crunchy and lots of numbers, and unless you're a numbers person, you're not really going to enjoy that session, okay? And I can see all the you know how I feel then, Tanya. This session is really about coming up with some quick hints for you. So we work with businesses that are mainly B2B, but we do B2C as well. We've worked with large organisations like British Telecom and News Limited, but most of our work is around SME. So what I'm going to share with you is lots of stories with lots of hints. And I've tried to, wherever possible, given an example for your business that's in the room or something like your business. So there's real life examples and what we see every single day. Now, I've designed the workbook. Can I grab somebody else's workbook since I'm not on the page? When we get up to page 7, literally we're going to go through it fast. I want you just note down a couple of hints that you can easily action. So this is really all the take home. But one of the things I find most frustrating when I come to workshops is there's lots of noise but not a lot of take home. I want this to be absolutely chocker of value for you and some new ideas that you may not have seen before. Okay, everybody talks about process a lot and not many people follow it. And it's a bit of a dry topic again, but it's so important to get it right. Excuse me. So as we go through this, I want you to really understand where the money is. Our sales processes are all about building trust and building value. And you'll be surprised, Ari Galper, who was mentioned when I was having a discussion, a good friend of mine, I respect him highly, he talks about this trust-based selling. And one of his quotes is, you can lose a sale. So most people think you can lose a sale at the end, or you lose the sale at the end, but in reality, you can lose it anywhere from hello. Okay, so this is more about the process, about how you sell. Okay, the first thing, we're just going to note off a couple of points. Who goes to a sales process and it's exactly the same every time? Anybody? Right. The reality is a sales process is normally drawn in a straight line, but the reality is, I can't get the pens off. It goes like this. That's called the feedback loop, or follow-up, should we call it. Death by follow-up. So you might go, it might take you 4 or 5 meetings. Does anybody sell in one sales meet, in one meeting? Let's get eight. Sometimes? Who has a complex sales process that takes more than one? So in lots of consulting businesses, they should be able to do it in 2 or 3. It was great to do it in one because your cost of sales is low and you've got more time to sell to more people. But therefore, our strategy will work. A sales process is about building value and trust. We're going to talk today about best practice, and we're going to stop the leaks. Well, as Ari says, we're going to not lose the sale through the process, our process that we're setting for ourselves. Okay, again, lots of information, but we're going to try and make it hugely valuable. I just thought I'd touch on this. I know, for some reason it's got a little confused. I know they were going to be on both. But I just want, just to touch on the buying cycle, I mentioned before that the buying cycle has changed. And you don't need to note all this down. Nope. But Hathwaite Research is the biggest sales research company in the world. And they defined the sales process. And it says, unless something changes, you're not willing to buy. Now, I'll give you a good example. Until you're ready to have a baby, do you notice prams? Are you in the market for a pram when you're 18 years of age? Okay, so if you don't think about having a baby, hopefully you're not thinking about it at 18, that was a really bad example, but at a mature age and a stage in your life when you're thinking about having a baby, all of a sudden what's important? Baby things. So something's changed over time. You have an awareness that you need a baby seat, baby clothes, baby cots, and every other baby thing you could ever imagine. Been there, done that. Then you start to go online and you figure out all the things that you want to buy. You make a decision and you purchase. But what's fascinating about this is in 1990, you can't read that, when we were buying, we were only 35% of the way through this cycle before we called in a supplier. So how many people were getting incoming phone calls for their business? Nobody? A few? Yeah, okay, great. So in 1990, people were only just thinking about travel. In today's world, they're 57% through that buying cycle. So they really made their basic decisions. So this is the way I look at it. In fact, Harvard Business Review in February this year quoted 65% of the way through. So even further. What this means to you guys is if somebody's phoned you, you're on a short list. I remember as a youngster many years ago, when I had to go and find a supplier, I used to get the yellow pages out, and I'm just going to show my age now, and literally flick through and you might contact 10 people. The reality is in this world, you're likely to have already pre-selected down to two or three. So if you don't know your numbers, ask yourself this. Let's say it's three people. If you're not converting those incoming leads at a rate of 33%, then you're talking yourself out of a sale. The numbers just don't make sense. So if you're one of three and you're not getting the sale, then there's something you do in the process. The reality is most people are down to one to two. And that's what the statistics are saying. People don't bother to ring three people, they just ring two. So you've got a 50-50 chance of making that sale. So if you're not converting 50% of your leads, do the numbers, then there's something wrong with your process. I like to share this story. It was Dale Beaumont. I don't know if anybody knows Dale Beaumont, but he's quite a renowned speaker. And he did some work with a company called Dr. Drip. And he went and saw them. And he's a plumber, so this is good for the tradies in the room. And he said, how's business? He said, it's a ripper. Absolutely fantastic. And he said, why is that? Because we've changed our sales process. Tell me more. What he did is Dr. Drip, instead of going over to the client, having a look at his toilet, goes, oh, it is leaking, and having a look under his house and going, oh, it really is leaking. Let me put a quote in the mail for you. Doing a quote, or perhaps even sending an email, very modern, and he would go away. So what Dr. Drip said, we don't do that anymore. We go along and we take our iPad and we click the photograph. And the photograph shows the client, look, you're about to have exploding sewage. What would you like to do about it? Well, how much is it going to cost? One moment, click, 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 click. It's going to cost you $1,000. But if I go away right now and have a call-out fee, it's going to be $1,200. What would you like to do? So what happens is the sales cycle goes to that one call. They say, yes, thank you, I'll have that now. He gets out his new ASB or ANZ thing on his iPad and scans the card and takes an email to send their address. So not only has he got database, but he's made an instant sale. Now the traditional plumber, Damien, is still sending a quote and he's still, to this day, following up. Death by follow-up. So if you haven't changed your sales cycle, if you've been in business for more than 5 years and you have not shifted your process, you are in trouble. Because we do things differently today. And it's all about, today is all about selling more faster. So that's what this session will be about. As that doesn't work on Keynote, we're going to ignore that one. So why do we need to get hung up on sales process? Process is, again, one of those dry subjects, but we need to have engagement with our customers. We need to have consistent best practice. You know, we work with salespeople, and it's interesting, the old bell curve, I'm not even trying to get those lids off those pens again, the old bell curve, we all know what a bell curve looks like. Every sales team I've ever worked in has the same situation. 10% are poor performers, 10% are top performers, and everybody else is somewhere in the middle. The old bell curve. What if we gave them a consistent process that they could all follow, so all those average people started moving up towards the top end? The reality is, and we know this, we did this exercise with 550 staff at News Limited, and we focused on improving the average performance by improving their process. They went up by 12%, increased our sales by 12%, and they had a declining demand by 5%, as you know. So a dying business, the old News Limited, but they actually got an increase in sales. And what happened to the top performers? Well, they're still the 10%, because they're so competitive, they will always be the top performers. So today's about getting that average performance, if you've got a team, or getting your own performance up. And then rinse and repeat. Okay, why do we want raving fans? What's a trait of a raving fan? This table. Tell their friends. What else does a raving fan do? Yeah, we've had that. What else do they do? Yep, so they're telling their friends. What else? Anybody else on the table? They come back. They order some more. Yeah, so they refer business. They tell everybody about it and they order some more. Is that easier than going out and finding a new customer? So sales process is about having raving fans. We're going to talk about it in two avenues. We're going to talk about lead, and then we're going to talk about the process. Now, every sales process is the same, by the way. When you go into a sales process, you engage with the customer, you ask them some questions, you provide them a solution, and then you close them. Now, it's not quite that easy, but the process is the same. But it's what happens inside the process is where the real value is. Oops, I'm pushing the wrong button. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. The reality we find is when we're drawing sales process, because everyone does that flowchart sales process, the reality is that you have different meetings and you do different things in those meetings. But whatever you do, when you document your sales process, it needs to be thorough. There's lots of flowcharts in these two presentations. So one of the things that I'd like to touch on now, and I'm going to need these pens, is trust. Here's Zig Ziglar. Who asked me about, well, was it you who asked me about Zig Ziglar? People like you, they'll listen to you. If they trust you, they'll do business with you. And I love the idea of trust as a piece of paper. Now, trust is something we all talk about, right? Everybody knows that people buy off people we trust. But ironically, it's a very misunderstood area. So think about two of your very closest friends. One you trust more than the other, just slightly. Do you know why? Can you articulate that? What about with a customer? Or you bought a supplier? Can you really distinguish exactly what's going on? You just know that you don't trust them. So we're going to investigate that. But I'll always like to have a little bit of a video. Oh. I want you to, as you watch this video, can we have the volume up quite loud this time? Because it's quite amusing. So we're going to ask Tinkerbell. So Tinkerbell's going to show trust. And I want you to think yourself as the bluebird in this video, as a customer. Now, the behaviours that Tinkerbell is demonstrating in her sales process to the bluebird, can I tell you, is probably reflective of 60% of the people that are out in the marketplace. And I'll let Tinkerbell tell that story.
Clapper. That's it! Have fun! Hey, Tink. You ready?
A little nervous, actually.
Oh, don't be silly. Come on, you'll be fine.
We're teaching baby birds how to fly. First, you have to get their attention. Smile and establish trust. See? Okay, open your wings, honey, and flap them up and down, up and down. That's the way. Faster, faster. That's right. Yes, you're doing it. Okay, come out this way a little bit. Oh, you're okay, you're okay. You got it! Keep flapping, keep flapping. Hey, why don't you help that last little guy?
Okay. Just smile and establish trust. Hi there! Hey, little fella! You want to do some flap-flap today? Oh, sure you do. All you do is you just flap your wings like this. Huh? No, none of that. Come on. All we gotta do is... Ow! Look, I'm gonna level with you, okay? I kinda bummed out on the whole water and light fairy things, and I'm starting to run out of options here. If you could see fit to flap your little wings and take flight for a few measly seconds, I might be able to go to the mainland and bring happiness to the world! What do you say? Wrong answer! Oh, if I end up making acorn kettles for the rest of my life, I am holding you personally responsible!
Hey, look at this!
not working.
So is your sales process working? Are you putting pressure on your little bluebirds? Has anybody ever been sold to like that? It's awful, isn't it? Ugh. I like to call it showing up and throwing up. Many, many people do it, and that's because they don't fundamentally know the sales process and how to build trust. So I'm going to share an equation with you. That's by David Meister, and his book is The Trusted Advisor. Anybody read The Trusted Advisor? It's an oldie, but thank you, Will. You've got that sign too. There's a theme here. Okay, so what he says, and he's a Harvard professor, and he did lots of research on what makes the difference in trust. So this is fundamentally what makes the difference between your two friends. And he says that trust is built by credibility. Now, Adam mentioned credibility today. It's also about reliability and intimacy, the relationship you have with people. So have you ever found it easier when you have a better relationship with people? It's easy to sell, isn't it? What have you thought about somebody that is coming to see you and they turn up late? Do you trust them? And what about credibility? One of the things, because I do a lot of work with B2B, is LinkedIn is often used as a tool in business to business. What does your LinkedIn profile say about you? So credibility plus reliability plus intimacy makes trust. I'm going to get you to have a little bit of a table exercise. I want this side of the room to do credibility. I want you to come up with ideas on how you can improve your credibility, either through your sales conversation or online. So best ideas on the table, get one of two free books. Okay, so ideas to build credibility. So that might be what you say. So it might be your compelling offer. So your behaviours inside the sales meeting, or what you do online. Is it your testimonials, that sort of thing? So come up with ideas. I'll tell you when in a second. This table here, I want you to come up with ways you can prove reliability. Prove your trust in your sales process with reliability. Okay, so it's not just about being on time. Think it through. What makes people reliable? Just think about moodiness. I'll just give you a little hint. And these two tables, I'd like to, if you could just join together for this exercise, that would be great. How do you improve your relationship? Through your interaction with your customer, whether it be online or face-to-face. How do you improve your intimacy? What do you need to be doing? What do you need to be asking? Okay, everybody stand up. Stretch your legs. It's that time of the day. Starting to come down. Great. Everybody on these two tables that is not a spokesperson, have you chosen your spokesperson? Stop all going like that. Okay, whoever's a spokesperson on table one and two, stay standing. Otherwise, everyone else can sit down. Okay, we've got two volunteers on this table and none on this one, so we're doing really well.
We're going to rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, rock, paper, scissors. Okay. Table number one, let's give some ideas on how you improve credibility. Thank you, Leonie.
We've actually decided that in our credibility we need to qualify the customer. So by qualifying the customer and finding out what their needs are, we'll be able to present them with the right product. So be it our case, in our case, for, you know, why are you coming in? They sit down and say, oh, we want a quote for Fiji. So we actually find out why they want a quote for Fiji. So do you want to go, why
all the questions.
All the questions. Yep. And in this instance here with our injectors, we have to qualify the customer as to what style of injectors they want, what price or whatever they need doing to be injectors. So we have to qualify the customer. And in this instance here, we have to qualify the customer by finding out what the end result is that they want from purchasing the treatment through.
So let me just be careful what that one. So when we talk about questions, we talk about intelligent questions. I had a company target me, which I'm normally quite hard to sell to, as you can probably imagine. But anyway, I decided to say yes in this situation, and then the person I'd been dealing with passed me over to somebody. So what happened is my intimacy went down straight away. Then our appointment was 11, and nobody contacted me until 20 past, and then apologised and was still another 10 minutes late. There goes reliability. And then they asked me, so they were asking about online marketing, about helping me with online marketing. And the first question they said to me was, can you give me a little bit of information about your business? And I said to them, you're an online marketing business. Have you heard of the internet? I said, unless you've got an intelligent question to ask me, if you haven't done the research, you're not credible enough to speak to me. Asking intelligent questions, asking people about their business in today's world is just ignorant. But if you're selling HR, then asking them about HR, what they're doing in HR is intelligent. So credibility is about the quality of those questions as well. We'll talk a little bit more. You guys, anything to add to that?
Is it being in publications?
Writing
books?
Health and fitness industry, if somebody turned up shockingly dressed and massively overweight as your trainer, if you go, yeah, that's just looking successful. You know, if Michelle Bridges didn't look like she did, would you really believe her?
Well, I was asked the team, I'm not like a trainer on the staff, so I said to them, we went to an event recently, and I said, how can I get you? I thought, if someone takes a look at me compared to you, I'm not that trainer.
So how, what about carpenters? So you're not going to be in gym gear. What about carpenters? How can you improve your credibility?
Your shirt? Yep. What? You're having no clothes or whatever Adam was suggesting. I mean, no shirt, no clothes. It's late in the afternoon. Naughty. So looking presentable. What about other things about builders?
Your tools, have the right vehicle, you know, things like that. I've played a role as a builder in at times like installed hospitals with hundreds of soap dispensers and things like that. I rock up wearing a certain pair of pants and boots and tool belt, and people just assume I'm a builder or a handyman. All I'm doing is zipping out screw and zipping screw in, but people just assume I've got years of experience just based on what I'm wearing.
Yeah. What was that movie when the guy imitated him as a pilot?
Catch Me If You Can, yeah, exactly. It's all part of appearance. It's all about credibility. But it's things like your tone of voice. I've got one of the sales reps I work with, I'm coaching him, and he's got lots of good things to say, but he says it so quickly that nobody can understand it. So it sounds like something like this, and it's really hard to understand, and I don't know really how he ever does any sales. So we're having to teach him just tonality and little things like that that really can add credibility. Okay, what about reliability? Team?
Yeah, I guess we've kind of threw a few things on the table as far as punctuality, referrals. One of the main things that I use when I was doing consultants work is I'll put like a project overview, a scheduled maintenance, a price list up front, so they're kind of templates. So the project overview on top of that is a spreadsheet. We hand that to the client on the initial consultation that just says, this is that process, this is what happens, this is the next step, this is the next step. And it all gets handed to them up front, so they know where they're up to. When we were up to the next trading quotes, they don't have that.
Yeah, it just gives them peace of mind because they know what's expected of them. You'd be surprised how comforting for the risk-averse people just having a process is that will actually help them trust you more. This is all about trust. Your collateral, your website. Great story. Had a client, a lead ring me and said they wanted to meet with me, have a chat. And I looked online on their website and there was this really, really handsome man. I thought, that'll be nice. I'm married, right? So I had a look. And I went to this cafe expecting this really handsome man turn up. And I didn't even recognise the fellow. Not that he was awful, but he certainly wasn't what the photo said. So how did that make me feel? Was what he was about to tell me reliable if he couldn't even have a photograph? Sorry, photographers. I'm all for a little touch-up, but this had gone to the extreme, right? So, yeah, he didn't look like Tom Cruise. And so just be careful. That's about reliability too. People want to know what they can expect from you. What about building relationship, building the intimacy?
We discussed making customer notes so that, you know, if you've met with someone and they've mentioned that they've been on a holiday, that you bring it up again and ask them about their holiday or family member or animal.
It's personal information, yep. What else?
Follow-up calls after the sale and thanking people. Like, I find that...
So the review process, yep, yeah, absolutely. Great time to ask for a referral, yep.
Yeah, feedback. Listening to them and getting information from them. If you had a shop front, you can have little specialty days like at Easter and have Easter eggs, little things that they go the extra mile.
Can I say the most important thing you picked out is listening.
Listening. I can't use this example when I work with the brethren because they don't date, but just imagine going, if you've ever been on a date and the other person doesn't listen to a word you've got to say, is there any chance that relationship's going to go any further? So listening is critical. I'll just explain self-orientation. So what the what David Meister said is that you might have all of these three going on, but if your care factor is more about you than the customer, it will start to erode those. So salespeople that are under pressure from a sales manager to close their sales at the end of a month tend to become about their own agenda. And this is where they can start to lose the sale. So I always have to check in with sales managers saying, don't put that pressure on, because you actually, that flows on to the customer. And all this hard work you've done up the top will get eroded. So if you've got too much care factor about you and not enough helping of the customer, then you're not going to build trust. Okay, so I just wanted to cover that. It's really important, and you can do that aspect in every relationship and every part of your process. Just use this as a check-in. Any emails that you send to customers, just check that they have all these three in it. Okay, it's really important. It's a very easy equation to apply, and it makes a difference, massive difference. Okay, so now we're going to go through some ideas. Now, at the bottom of each of the screen, and I'm not going to go through them, I won't bore you to tears, and we will send you these. There is full statistics on the bottom of each of the slides to show you that this is proven. You choose what you want to take out of that. So here's some ideas. On your page, what page did I say? 7, is it? Okay. Lead generation. Have some policies and procedures around it. How many minutes should you be responding to the leads and travel agents? What if there's nobody available? When should you get back to them? Within 24 hours. Is that good enough, guys? Okay. I have a customer of mine, and their average sale is $500,000. They do dentistry fit-outs, and they'll remain nameless. They take up to 3 weeks to respond to a web inquiry. But yeah, so was I surprised when I said, so how long does it take you to answer a web inquiry? And the salespeople said, oh, next day latest. And the sales support person says, up to 3 weeks. So what's the chances of even getting the sale? If somebody has a opt-in sheet, and they want you to download, send it to them. But then send them a day later or even an hour later saying, since you downloaded this, thought you might be interested in this as well. Whenever I get a web inquiry of a customer, the first thing I do is I've got 2 books. I wrap up my 2 books in beautiful red wrapping paper, put a big bow around it and stick it in the post, saying, thanks very much for your inquiry. I don't really need to do much more than that. So you've got those leads and the money. Make sure you look after them with tender, loving care. Pre-qualifying on page, I've given you this, page 8. In every single business I have gone into, with the one exception, there is no pre-qualification checklist. So you all think you're pre-qualifying. Remember, the only limiting factor is time. You only want to see the right people. If you don't have a pre-qualification checklist in your business, I've given you a very complex one. Dumb it down. Just use what's important to you, but make sure that it's in your business. Because if they're not ready to buy, move them on. The numbers say that 27% of people are only ready to buy. Some of them are just inquiring. We want to nurture them, but we don't want to spend sending our salespeople or even ourselves if we're short of time out to those people. So do a good job on that. So I've given you the tool. The nurture program, always make sure it's got the same messages and you use some strong influencing techniques. I've just added these in. Scarcity and urgency. Anybody gone onto a website and they've seen the ticking down clock? Perfect example. Intent. I really like to help you. Here's a free health check. Case studies. I noticed that you were from the dental industry. Here's something that we've done in the dental industry that will really drive some difference to your bottom line. Reciprocity. Give a bonus gift. The two books is reciprocity. It's a hard word to say. Social proof. Adam talked about social proof this morning. Nothing. One of the videos on my website is from Paul Dunn, ex-Bulldogs player. Anybody that's into football would recognise Paul Dunn. Much better to have social proof than somebody like that. Research, white papers. White papers stand up more than just random information. And having an event or a community, doing something, giving back is really paying it forward, like Steve is doing. Okay, so that we'd use those in the nurture program. Okay, engage. You would be amazed, and I am going to give you this from my experience. I have only ever, I've coached maybe 120 salespeople now. So that's side by side in the field with salespeople. We'd use this tool to convert leads, by the way. So we'll go out and we'll sit in a car and we'll drive out and see a customer with a salesperson. And only once, and actually happened to be a personal friend, but only once has anybody ever set an agenda in that meeting. Now you say to me, so what, Tanya? That's not a big deal. We're having a nice conversation. What happens if you don't send an agenda is you don't tell the customer what's expected. What part of the trust equation is that? Reliability. So all of a sudden you miss your opportunity to build some trust. The other thing is if you don't send an agenda, you don't tell the customer what's expected at the end. So what does that do to your sales cycle? It makes it go longer. So an agenda might sound like something like this. Look, it's great to meet you. Why don't we spend some time getting to know each other? And if there's a good fit between your business and what I can offer, then perhaps at the end we figure out how we move forward and go to the next level of our assessment. Okay, so that's obviously very business to business. But if you were as a builder, you might say something like, look, let's just start with what you're thinking about doing. And then if I think I'm a really good fit with that, perhaps I can go away and organise a quote so we can figure whether it's going to be within your budget. So they know what the process is and they know what to expect. There's one thing called, and we're going to get into this a little later, called an advancement objective. And I worked with a company who did leather seats on cars, like made them all pretty. And we put an advancement objective in their engage part of their process. They had a 20% increase in sales because they literally told the customer why they were there. Because before, it seemed like they were just there for a cup of coffee. So it raised their credibility by doing this and increased their sales, just in this part of the process. Okay, explore the questions. We talked about questions, part of credibility. Don't ask silly questions. The more questions you ask, the better, but make them intelligent. Marketing company. Branding company I work with called Ascender. Fantastic what they do. They're amazing stuff. But they used to have these incredibly long-winded meetings. So the first meeting, the client would come in and they would leave 2 hours later while the salesperson asked them a list of inane questions that really went nowhere. And their conversion rate was extraordinarily low. They now have seven questions. Seven good quality questions and they convert 50%. They were about 10% before. And he holds it to his chest like gold, saying this. So now the sales meeting's 25 minutes. So what have we done? They got higher conversion and we've got it faster just by asking better questions. So if you do not have a question bank, a list of intelligent, competent questions that challenge status quo, challenge your competitive position, celebrate your values, then that would be something on your to-do list, okay? One quick tip. If your value is, so I'm working with a company that does timber flooring. And one of their values is that they use environmentally friendly or environmentally sustainable forest to create their wood. Now, if you're an interior decorator and you don't give a damn about the environment, is it relevant to even bring that up? But if it is, if you start asking questions about the importance of that, you can get that information online. If you start asking that information about being environmentally or sustainable produce, all of a sudden you have a solution that sets you apart from your competition, there's a point of difference. So reverse, figure out what your value is, what makes you your on time and your proof points, you know, you so what, who cares, prove it, and then reverse engineer your questions so the answer is what your offer is. It's a little trick of the trade. The other thing in there, was make sure that you understand the true motivators. Can I tell you that most salespeople don't ask the why now question? So, great that you're talking about going to Fiji. Why? Why now? What was the reason that you made the decision? So many people don't ask that very simple question, and that sometimes is the true emotional cause around why they're going to make a decision. The rest of it's just rational needs. Okay. Proposal. Okay, this one. And he used the sender and a company called ProSale, who's a joint venture partner. Now, ProSale says, so who gives proposals in their business? You give proposals? Not used to. Proposals? Yeah. If you do not deliver your proposal in person, you reduce your chance of sales by 80%. So if you are emailing quotations, this is as a whole. This is a quick plug, stop the leak. Okay, go and talk to them. No, you might not be able to. It might not suit your business. Not everything's going to suit your business. But if you've got a high-value product and you're not delivering it in person, or you've got a complicated product or a creative product, if you can't, the rules are the more you pay, the more involved that the buyer should be. So the dentistry fit-out company and a sender, the marketing people, used to stand up the front with this pretty presentation and they'd vomit all over, they'd show up and throw up, right? Vomit all over their guests and they'd hold it all to their chest. And at the end they'd say, so what do you think of that? So for a sender, instead of that now, we ask them to put each idea down on the table and get the clients up on their feet and touching and feeling. Now, the more involved a client is, the more chance they're going to buy. So if your proposal process is not done in person and not including the customer touching feeling, then you're lowering your chances of sales. Every single one of these best practice tweaks will have a direct impact to your bottom line revenue. Every single one of them. So imagine if we collate them all together. Follow-up. Death by follow-up. Who gets into the death by follow-up cycle? Come on, honesty. Yeah. Okay. I'm just ringing to follow up your quote. Please never say that again. It's death by follow-up. I mean, there's rules, right? The statistics, the American statistics, and I'll be careful to say that, the American statistics say you've got to phone 5 times to get a follow-up because it just might not be convenient. But there's a couple of little hints here. Never say I'm here to follow up because it's got nowhere to go. Say, I'm just checking. I'd love some feedback on where you're at. It forces people to give you information. When they give you information, they may give you an objection. That's okay. We can handle objections. But don't get in that trap. There's another couple of other techniques to help you with follow-up. If you're in the meeting for a proposal and you're giving them their proposal or you've got a quote, agree to pop back past them to get their answer. Don't say, I'll give you a call. The likelihoods of somebody saying no to you in person, and again, this might not fit all businesses, is lower. Okay? So these are little tricks that make a difference. So there might be 1 or 2% to your conversion rate, but imagine them all piled together. I'll give you the numbers at the end. Now, upsell. Has everybody got something to upsell? The travel agent girls will have truckloads to upsell. There's certain rules. And what happens when they order something on Amazon? Anybody know? When you get to the cart, what happens? You might also like. Or people have also looked at. And what about McDonald's? When you drive to the window, what happens? When does it happen in the sales process? Once you've placed your main order. What happens if people try to upsell you before you've got your order out? What was that? Yeah. So exactly right. So they will feel sales pressure. So your upsell in your sales process has to be perfectly placed. And it must be placed after they've already made a decision. And this is true online as well. So don't try to upsell and vomit on them with your fries, ever. Because it will sound like a sales pitch, and does anybody like to be sold to? Okay, so learn from these people. There's actually, I won't go into what the brain does and all that sort of thing, but it's a fantastic way to improve your process. And then the last thing, which we can't possibly read on that, it says, implement, review, gain referral. Now let me just, let's say, why do we do a review? We do a review because we can get a video testimonial when we're talking to that customer, or a written testimonial. Why else do we do a review? To see what we can do better. What if you've done an amazing job and it's a big business? What would a good review do for you? Get you introductions to the other business. Get you those referrals. Now, I'm going to talk about referrals. Who bases their most of their work on referrals? Okay. The referral process should start earlier. It should never be at the end. Most people make this mistake. So once somebody's agreed to buy from you, in your conversation when you're placing the order, you just sort of say, look, I'm really looking forward to what we do. We base most of our business on referral, so it really is up to me to make sure I impress you. So they know that you're going to... So setting up those expectations, being reliable. Okay? Then the secret. So I'm going to give the builders the example I've been talking about. And I saw a builder do this inside our building. We live in a high rise. And the first letter came out and the builder had engaged in building in a high rise. And you can imagine how noisy it is. And they were jackhammering concrete in a high rise. So it was very noisy. So the letter came out and said, my name is so-and-so, I'm the builder. We're gonna make lots of noise. I'm terribly sorry. Here is my direct phone number, building intimacy, being credible, being reliable. Here is my direct phone number. Feel free to contact me. And by the way, here's a photograph of the apartment before we start work. About 4 weeks later, after the jackhammering, and surprisingly how forgiving we were because they'd already apologised in advance, we get another letter in the post. Congratulations for surviving the jackhammering. We're up to stage two of the project and you might hear some hammering. I thought we'd like to give you a little progress report. Here's a photograph. If you would like to come up to the site at any time, please give me a day's notice and I'll make it safe and comfortable for you to come and view. Now, what do nosy neighbours do? Every time. Now, this happened 4 steps, and at the very end, there was a lovely gift card in all of our letterbox saying, "It has been a real pleasure to work in this building. You guys have been fantastic. And I hope we haven't inconvenienced you." Just to make sure that all that inconvenience, you get to see the end result, because it would be frustrating if you didn't. We're having an open day morning. Why don't you come up Saturday morning? This is approval with the customer. So off we all go. We see all the neighbours. We have our cup of tea and a morning tea. He's got 4 more jobs. There's only 18 floors in our building. So he's got 5 jobs from that one process. That's just referral, clever marketing, okay? You never have to go anywhere. You can just live in the neighbourhood with that attitude. And if you do use that policy on across the road and beside you, whether it be a house instead of an apartment, still works. Okay. Oh, we're going to miss that because we're going to run out of time. Okay. Oh, that's awfully small. I use PowerPoint. We're using Keynote, so sometimes it goes a bit skew-iff. So meeting one. Okay, so the first time you meet with a customer, oh, you can't read that, so I'm just going to... We're going to create a sales playbook now. So meeting one on what page is it?
14.
So when you go to your very, very first meeting, consider what you need to prepare. Best practice, you need to have reviewed the person online. That's your minimum requirements. I had a customer, and it's actually one of my longest customers and my most... a large revenue-generating customer, and I still work for them 1 day a week. I turned up, I had done a LinkedIn printout. Actually, Will, you've done one of me. Can I have that? I did so well. It looked me up on the website. This is me. So I looked the client up who I was seeing, plus all the other people that were in the senior team. I'd printed out two key pages on their website and used a highlighter to highlight some of the aspects around their value proposition. I walked in the door, and we were just generally chatting, and then I said to him, my very first question was, hey, I noticed on your website you had a value proposition around that. He said to me, what have you got in your folder? I thought, oh, here I go, I'm going to be in trouble. He says, what have you got in your folder? And I said, oh, I just do a little bit of research before I go and see a client. He says, what's your research, love? I said, well, you've got all your LinkedIn profiles and all your bits and pieces. He said, so what do you think? And I said, oh, I can see some gaps. I said, do you want to talk about it? He goes, no, you've got the work. I said, I've seen three suppliers and you're the only person who's walked in and researched. I didn't have to sell anything just because I did the research. I could never ever walk in unprepared, because if you're not prepared, what does it do to your sales process? Makes it go faster. Extends your sale. Means less time to sell more. So preparation, you need to figure out what you need to prepare. Builders, things you've done in the area. A list of things you've done in the area so they can drive by and have a look. Okay? Pictures. Before and afters, fantastic. Take them with you. Never. The first meeting is the crunch meeting. If you don't get past there, you never get the sale. Okay? I'm just going to touch on this quickly. This is another Huthwaite area. Advance versus continuation. Most salespeople and business people suffer from continuations, which is basically a cup of coffee. The difference is if you can get the client to do something, then they're advancing it. So you must be clear on what your advances are. So we'll take the dentistry fit-out company. I've just done this exercise with them literally yesterday. And we said, the only way people will buy, or we know that we will buy, is if we can get them to our showroom. So after the first meeting, the next meeting needs to be in their showroom. If we don't do that, we extend the sales cycle by two meetings. So their sales cycle is already six meetings. So imagine making it eight. So they know that they need to make that invite inside the business. And they need to have their key personnel there. They also need to have their key decision maker in that room. If they don't, what does it do to the sales cycle? It pumps it out. So you need to consider in every case, like the distributors. Yeah, mate, well, I'll think about that as a continuation. But if he says, well, let me understand what room it's going to take out on a shelf, I'll measure it up and I'll come back to you, is an advancement. Okay, you need to clearly understand every meeting what that advancement is you're looking for. Because then you will see it and you'll know that you're getting buying signals. It'll also help you with your agenda. So I want you to prepare this form for meeting one. Okay? I want you to consider your preparation, what advance you would need to see. So how would you go to impress them? Think about credibility, reliability, and intimacy. This is every single one of you has a first meeting, whether it's a client ringing up on the telephone or you're meeting with somebody. But consider your preparation. Do you need a qualification checklist? Do you need a question bank? Do you need proof and credibility pieces? Think about what that needs to be for your first meeting. And think about what buying behavior you need that person to do. So, for example, if they start showing you around their house, are they more likely to buy than if they leave you in the lounge and talk to you there?
Yeah, usually they sign up before I even go out.
Oh, good. That's even better. That makes it much easier. But the more involved you get in the process, the better. But consider, in your case, if it's just telephone sales, we're looking for language. We're looking responses to questions. But we need to be clear what that is, or you'll miss it, or you'll not go looking for it and not change your behaviour. So that's our last exercise so that we finish on time, I think. Yeah, sure.
How do you live towards the advancement without taking away the trust? Getting back to the other thing about, never using the word follow up or never trying to make them think that they're being led down a path towards. How do you do it without making that happen?
You put it up front, you make it part of the expectation. So the dentistry fit out company, when we set the agenda, we put the advancement in the agenda. So when we sit down with these people, they're going to tell us that they've leased a office block empty and we're going to turn it into a dentistry. And so they sort of know what they want, right? So the setting of the agenda, the engaged stage of the process would sound something like that in this situation. Look, today's a bit of a meet and greet, and just to get an overview of what you're up against. I can see that the premises is about 100 square metres, and there's lots of work to do on it. So perhaps what we can do is talk about the premises and some of the basic things that you need, and then we can figure out potentially some of the colours that you might look at. So when you come into the showroom for our next meeting, we'll make sure that we have things ready. Does that sound pushy? Or like, are you helping? It sounded pushy? So when you come into the show, because they're probably, I mean, you don't ring up. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, V-Devil's ever good. I'm happy for that.
Not to make them feel like they're being pushed down a process, and you don't have a sheet going down, you're
dealing with 10 things. In this case, they're always incoming leads, not outgoing leads. So there's a distinctive difference. They actually have a reason to buy. So if it was you trying to create that, then yes, it would be. But in their case, they have a need, they have an empty space, and it is a pretty natural thing. The only difference between what you're saying is that you're saying come to the showroom rather than we'd meet on site. That's the only thing. It's a natural thing. But if it's you're making the process, then that would be yucky because you would sound like you were selling to them. But in this case, they have a need. They've asked you to draw up some drawings, which is a cost of sales, so they expect there to be for you to come back with that. And all they're saying is instead of it being on your site, there's being on theirs. So if it was, if you were approaching them, you would just, so it was a first call on a brand new approach, you know, look, you've created an email interest or you've got a campaign and they said, okay, I'll be interested to talk to you. The first meeting is making sure there's a fit. So you're wanting to build that trust. And then the next meeting, you'll have to go into more analysis normally. So for builders, you know, you're going to sit down and say, well, this is a bit of a get to know you session. You know, and if the fit's right, then we'll go into quotation process. If it's not, then that's the end of it, right? But you say that right up front. And then at the end of the sales call, you go, our next step would be normally to put a quote together. How would you like to move forward from here? Okay, so we're not pushing anybody into anything. We're saying we said up front that the next stage was a quote. Now we're at the end of this conversation. Yes, I think it's a good fit. The next stage is doing a quote. How would you like to move forward from here? Okay, see how it works? What if you don't have that advancement in your head? What happens is you have this nice conversation, and at the end you go, let me go away and I'll send you some brochures. And let me follow up with you. And let me make the sales cycle as long as possible. We know doing any one of these parts of this process, we can reduce the sales cycle on complex sales, some of yours are not complex sales, from 7 sales calls down to 4. So we give back 30% of salespeople's time. We know that we can get on average, so the sales teams that we work on that embed this process get between 23% and 40% increase in sales just by doing best practice in each of these stages. It is significant. So we looked at our target market, we looked at the numbers to get there and the activity, the quantity. This is about the quality. And unless you sit down and mind map it and create your sales playbook, like all the big corporations do, I know it sounds like a lot of work, but if you just got to put some common sense and lay that trust equation. The other thing you need to do is consider added value. How can you give them something unexpected? How can you delight them? So in every sales call you go to, I try to always leave them with one hint, an easy hint. One example, and that's me, I'm done. One more example. I went and saw a client, and they're currently still a prospect. And I said to them, so tell me about your how you work. And they're basically a quote and hope company. So I said, so that everybody gets this quote and then we follow up. And I said, so do you follow up everybody? And they said, oh no, we don't have the resources to follow up everybody. And I said, so tell me what do you follow up and what you don't follow up? And they said, well, unless the order is over $20,000, we don't follow up. And I said, oh, that seems like a reasonable amount. I said, so how, out of all the quotes, as a percentage of quotes, how many are below $20,000? I said, oh, about 60%. I said, I'm not coming to train your sales team, guys, until you've plugged your leak. They leave 60% of all that hard work just to fall down the toilet at the end. Just plug the leak. And they said, but we don't have the money. We don't have the resources. I said, I should have used the term ninja, Steve. Ninja it or automate it, but do something with it. Don't quote and hope, guys. Don't be in that spinning follow-up cycle. Don't extend your sales cycle. Convert as fast as you can every time by having consistent best practice in your sales process. Thank you very much, and I hope I gave you lots of hints.